The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast. Fresh off a Sunday night appearance, the Red Sox took 2 out of 3 against the Chicago Cubs, leaving us with a lot to talk about. Joining us tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing?
Living the dream, my friend. The ocean's getting warmer. So is the weather. And just dandy.
The weather is heating up, as is the offense. Also joining us tonight, a fellow Floridian, Gabrielle Blanchard out of Port St. John, Florida. Gabby, how are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for joining us. Taking a quick look at the standings, the Red Sox are still in third place, 3 games back at the New York Yankees. Sandwiched in between the two teams is the Orioles at 17-10. In fourth place is the Blue Jays, and bringing up the rear are the Rays, which I think is overall largely surprising. Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find the account on Twitter?
So my personal account, at CushmanMLB, the podcast account can be found at Bastards_Boston. You can find us on Instagram. I have a baseball only account on Facebook, Terry Talks Sox, if you're a Facebook only person. And we have a YouTube channel, so plenty of content all over the place.
Come hang out with us, come interact. But as we mentioned, the Red Sox took 2 out of 3, so that leads us to do the positive side of this segment. We're going to get into the studs and duds here shortly. So, Terry, why don't you lead us off with your stud from the weekend? A lot of them to talk about.
I am going to go with Jarren Duran. And Duran had made the bottom five on the midweek show, losing the series to the Guardians. And looking at his overall line, he was 3-for-13, not super robust. There were some players that were a lot more productive as far as hits go. But the walk he drew tonight in the finale, in the ninth inning, really set the stage for this win, which ultimately gave us the win for the series. He drew the walk, and then who was it after him? I think it was Devers. It was Devers. Basically, ripped one up the gap. That advanced Duran over to third. And it's still no outs. So, and I remember when he was on first, I was like, if the ball's placed exactly right, he's going to come all the way home from first. But it just wasn't placed quite right. But with no outs, runners on the corner, you had to feel pretty good about it. Mark Leiter Jr. was trying to get the game into extra innings, but he had no command whatsoever. So the Red Sox were able to capitalize on that. And one of my big gripes about Duran, I'm going to say it and say it and say it, is he doesn't draw enough walks. And tonight it was the walk that was the most impactful at bat for him this series. So I'm going to give it to Duran.
Gabby?
Well, he also hit that triple too, right? And I feel like that really kind of kept the game going also. And it gave, like a spark to the team, and they just kept it rolling from there. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. I mean, he had his hand on two, I would say two of the largest moments in the game, right? You know, that two-run triple that you mentioned kind of put a little bit of breathing room. All year, we would get out to a one, maybe two-run lead early in the game, but we would never really put teams away or get us in a position that we'd be more comfortable with. So getting that extra breathing room, which turned out to be, you know, very necessary later in the game, was huge. And, you know, Terry, to what you mentioned, that walk, I think, was extra impressive because he was down 0-2 early and fooled badly on that curveball, right? And we were looking at, you know, potentially another low and inside sweeper that Duran, you know, swings on top of, and you know, Rafi's trying to hit a two-run home run to end the game right there. But, you know, I also wanted to give some shine to Devers in that moment too, staying within himself, just pushing the ball through the opposite side, knowing that he had speed with Duran, you know, to kind of change the game. He didn't need to do too much. And, you know, I think that's another presence that Duran brings to this offense is, hey, if you would just put the ball in play, I'm going 180 feet. It's not just the 90 feet that most guys are able to get. I can do more with this. You know, it's good to see him start to warm up a little bit. He is a bit streaky, and I think that might be kind of like the next level to his game is to be a little bit more consistent and have, I guess, shorter dry spells when he does go through them. Because, you know, he was hitting over 340 for a while, then he got all the way down to 240. So, you know, maybe this is him figuring something out or making, you know, another adjustment to an adjustment that's been made from him. But we definitely don't win this game, nor do we win this series without the contributions that he made tonight. Terry.
I agree. And I've said, you know, if the walks go up, I think everything else goes up. The hits, you know, the opportunities to steal bases and all that. But that was actually a really good point on Devers as well, not doing too much there, just kind of, you know, just trying to, you know, get on base and move Duran as far as he can. And you look at, you know, the last few weeks that Devers has had, he's had a knee problem, he's had a shoulder problem, and Tristan Casas, due to the violence of his swing, is going to miss a few months with that torn cartilage in his rib cage. So hopefully Devers is kind of, you know, looking at the full scope of things and thinking, well, you know, I need to be a little bit smarter. I need to be a little bit more composed and, you know, try not to hurt myself and at the same time help the team as much as I can. And he's been pretty productive. I mean, I was going to get to him in the honorable mentions, but 4-for-11 this series, going back last series against the Guardians. I thought he had a decent, where is he? Yeah, 6-for-9 in the Guardians series. Both of his games were three-hit games. So he's on fire straight off the injured list. So we'll see what that does in the Giants series.
I was going to say he came back at a blistering pace, better than he was before he went on the pine. I mean, I think he's hitting like 423. He's added some walks to his game. You can't even say he picked up where he left off because he wasn't doing too good before he took his, you know, a couple of days to kind of get sorted out there. So it's definitely great to see him come back and not need any time to ramp up, but to just be hitting the ball, you know, all over the yard right away. But Gabby, who was your stud for the series?
My stud for the series was Seydon Rafaela. Picked him. I am really interested in watching him play. You know, the first game, obviously nothing really happened. But during the second game, the total blowout, he had 4 at-bats, 4 hits, 1 home run, and 7 ribbies. And I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, he kept the game going. I think that the amount of hits that were happening in that second game were just, it was insane. It was like the offense finally woke up. There was no offense at all in the first game, but the second game, they really woke up and they came back and they kept it going for game three. So my stud is Rafaela.
Terry?
He had, that's the biggest game of his short career so far. And not only has he been on fire, you know, in the batter's box the last couple of games, but seamlessly goes from center field to shortstop. And ever since, the errors are down. Like, it's not an automatic thing anymore. So that's been nice to see. He also had a ball tonight that, if it wasn't for that young Cubs rookie, I'm getting his name right now, Pete Crow Armstrong, their center fielder. He had a great read on the ball, a great jump on the ball. That ball was going to land right in the middle of the gap and would have been an easy double for Rafaela had it just been an average outfielder out there. That would have given him a two-hit game tonight. So, you know, hopefully this is a sign of things to come. The pitch recognition has been a problem for him. But I did notice going back to the Guardian series, and he didn't have a great series, but I mentioned last week how he was looking a little bit more patient in the batter's box and, you know, not so intense, getting ready to jump on every little thing. I'm trying to get his line from last week. Yeah, 2 for 12, but I, despite not being super robust, I really thought he was headed in the right direction. And then 5 for 12 in this series. And like I said, Armstrong kind of robbed him. He would have been 6 for 12. So we've got a tough pitching staff coming up with San Francisco. So we'll see. I mean, if he has a 3 or 4 hit series against the Giants, this could be a sign of things to come. So hopefully we see it. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I think both of these are great points. You know, Gabby, to what you mentioned, the coming out party, right? He's leading the team in RBIs, and I don't think any one of us would have had that on our bingo cards or, you know, on our prediction sheets, whether it even be a hot take or a bold prediction. You know, I think he had the best game as a rookie in terms of RBI production since 2008. The dude, you know, to what Terry mentioned, has been looking a lot more comfortable in the box. He's kind of getting settled at short, which has been a position that we've, you know, kind of struggled with ever since Xander left. So to be able to see him play plus defense there and start to make some contributions in the batter's box, all of these things are great signs of, you know, hopefully things to come, right? You know, this is a player that we invested in fairly heavily in the offseason to an unproven talent at the major league level. And, you know, I hope it's one of those win-win kind of situations, a little for him, a little for us. And it's just been great to see, you know, a player have that kind of resiliency and, you know, the front office, which has taken a lot of heat and a lot of flack, you know, from this podcast, from other media outlets, you know, kind of get one, we'll call it right, or at the very least, you know, hey, say we're going to commit to our rookie talent and give him the chance to learn at the major league level. Cause it'd be very easy in the midst of one of these long slumps when he's swinging at everything low and away to be like, all right, kid, you got to get back down to AAA, get your confidence up, hit some balls. And then, you know, maybe we'll bring you back up, whether it be at force of injury or, you know, lack of depth or whatever you call it, but they kind of let it ride. And hopefully, you know, he's kind of figuring it out on the fly at the big league level, which we've seen, you know, quite a few players do in a couple of recent seasons. Anything anybody wanted to add? Yes, Terry.
Yeah, just looking at Saturday's game, and I admittedly, that was the one game in the series I didn't see, but just going through the lines, 11 of the 17 runs were driven in by Rafaela, Dahlbeck, and Yoshida. So your three guys that are struggling pretty bad were the heaviest contributors. Of those 17 runs, Devers didn't drive in one. Wong didn't drive in one. Everybody else basically did. So it was an interesting game, and I had the Red Sox losing that game. So that was, I was explosively wrong on that one.
Yeah. And, you know, those are the at bats, too, that could kill kind of those rallies, right? Those big innings. If a player that comes up that's slumping, you know, strikes out or rolls over on one, you know, that's another out, or, you know, that caps the inning. Maybe that game stays a little bit closer, and who knows what happens. So, you know, for Rafaela to kind of put it to bed, you know, I guess profoundly, definitely is a reason to land in the stud column for sure. Moving on to the final stud for the weekend. The stud that I had is Craig Breslow. You know, I've been a little unorthodox with my studs selection recently, but I wanted to commend him for going out and getting Garrett Cooper. You know, I know this isn't a guy that you're going to write home about or, you know, a ticket tape parade type player. But Breslow, you know, obviously saw the need to replace Costas at first base. Dahlbeck clearly wasn't getting it done. Love the kid. Wish him all the best. Everywhere we put him defensively, he shined, but he just can't get it done in the batter's box. He did heat up a little bit this series. Give the guy credit where credit's due. But Breslow went out and got major league talent, a guy that's been in the majors for, you know, quite a few years, has an all-star team selection, has major league level pop. He might not be the flashiest player, might not be, you know, the guy that you were necessarily hoping for, but it's not like we brought in another reclamation project. It's not like we're calling on other teams, minor league prospects that we're going to call up, you know, that wouldn't be playing at the majors for another organization that is playing at the majors at our level. So this is a big league move. And these are the things that we're kind of clamoring for. These are the types of things that we're asking the front office to do, right? It might not be the sexiest thing, but at the very least you can understand it. And I don't know about defend it, but there was plenty of moves in the past that has been made by this front office that left all of us kind of holding the hot potato, or, you know, holding the stick of dynamite, being like, what are we doing here? Additionally, you know, Grissom's looking like he's doing very well. I think he had five hits out of his last five at-bats in his rehab assignment. Looks like he's going to be rejoining the team on Tuesday. So all of these small moves, all of these, you know, kind of mitigation plans that Breslow has kind of put in place, whether it be during the season or during the offseason, that sale trade looks like it, you know, could be kind of turning the favor for this front office, which I think would be very beneficial at a time in which this team, you know, really does need reinforcements.
So I'm not as excited as some people are with Garrett Cooper. You know, how many trades for cash considerations were epic trades, and you're like, oh my God, you know? So it's just not something I'm that excited about. He should be somewhat serviceable. He only played, 12 games for the Cubs, was hitting .270, .341. I mean, after watching Dahlbeck, of course, you're going to take that. And he's probably going to get most of the starts at first base until Costas comes back. Costas was actually put on the 60-day IL. And that essentially cleared the roster spot for Cooper to be, you know, placed onto the Red Sox. And the bummer about that was when Costas spoke to the media, he said it could be 3 weeks, it could be 6 weeks, it could be 9 weeks. So the extreme optimists were probably hoping for the earlier end of that. But now that he's on the 60-day, even if he was ready in 3 weeks, you can't be taken off of it. You're on the 60-day for 60 days once you're placed on it. So that puts him out until, late June. So the last week of June, first week of July could be the earliest we get him back. And I have a feeling it's probably going to be longer anyway. It just sounds like a tough injury. There's nothing like, if it's your arm, you put it in a cast, it heals, you're good. Cartilage in your rib cage, it just, like they said, it's impossible to put a timetable on it. And I have a feeling it could be a while. But getting back to Cooper, so he was kind of expendable because the Cubs have that young prospect at first base. I think he did some damage to us in the first game of the series, Michael Bush. So, you know, there wasn't really a spot on the Cubs roster for Garrett Cooper, and nobody else seemed to want him for cash considerations. So the Red Sox ended up acquiring him. Jokingly, I said on Twitter that the Red Sox waited until the Cubs came to Fenway to acquire him so they wouldn't have to pay for his plane ticket to Boston. But the nerds immediately attacked me and said, oh, he's not with the team. If you're DFA'd, you're not with the team. And guys, learn to take a joke, okay? I'm a sarcastic a-hole, and, you know, that's never going to change. So, but yeah, so he could be in the lineup. Monday's an off day. Tuesday, game one against the Giants. So maybe we'll see him, you know, in that first game.
Gabby, what are your thoughts?
So admittedly, I don't really know a whole lot about Mr. Cooper. However, I will say that I think that Breslow is doing what he can with the leash that the front office has given him. And I think that it's important that we give him credit where credit is due, because I think the small moves that he has made have not been terrible moves, although they're not mighty. I think they've been beneficial for the most part.
That's an absolutely great point, you know, and a lot of teams claim to win the offseason. They go out and make the splashy moves and they can hang their banners in the offseason, a la, you know, the Chicago Bears. They're always talking about, oh yeah, this is going to be our year. We're so back. We got this great, you know, pick, or we signed this great free agent. And then, you know, guess what? You're picking in the top 10 in the NFL draft the next year. So really, what great, you know, does it do for you? It's the organizations, you know, the Pats did it for the longest time. They make the unsexy pick. They make the unsexy moves. They, you know, sign a tackle. They shore up the defense. They get the depth. You know, they make the moves in the middle of the night that nobody's really paying attention to that pay dividends down the road. And, you know, it's tough for us to say, hey, these are those moves, because it's still early in the process and, you know, early in the season, early in the tenure. But, you know, hopefully down the road, we can kind of start to see the game plan, start to see the vision, and you know, these can kind of pay those dividends that we're looking for. And, you know, this Cooper cat doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, hitting the cover off the ball. You know, we're going to be the Boston Coopers before we know it at this point. But, just hit 270. If you hit your career average, I think this place will be over the moon for you, right? Because we've had such, you know, a lack of offense at that first base position since Costas went down. And, you know, even when Costas wasn't going well, it was kind of ugly. So, you know, if he can kind of keep it right around that 270 mark, if he hits a couple of bombs, a couple of doubles, I think we'd be, you know, more than thrilled, just because it is a positive from what we've been getting. And, you know, the thing that's going to be, I think, ironic is he's got to play pretty good defense, because Bob's been playing pretty good defense at first, right? You know, he hasn't been making any errors at the very least, and he hasn't, you know, kind of gone out of the way to, you know, I guess, boot a couple. But I'm going to kick it over to Terry for some honorable mentions. Who do we have for the honorable mentions for this series?
Tons of them, mostly thanks to game two, but I have to give a lot of credit to Tyler O'Neill, who continues his torrid home run pace. Charlie was adamantly telling us as early as a couple weeks ago that he would hit 10 by the end of April, and he's at 9 right now. So one more away. That Giants pitching staff is going to be tough, though. What is the date today? How far do we have left to go?
Today is the 28th.
Oh, he's got, and tomorrow? No, Charlie, it might not happen. Do we have Logan Webb first? I think we do.
Yep, we do.
Yeah, that's April 30th. Charlie's not going to make it. But he did have a good series. And then today, even though I gave Duran the most credit for that ninth inning, it was a bloop hit that was nearly caught. It was basically hit out to what's called the Bermuda Triangle. And the shortstop there for the Cubs couldn't come up with it. And that's how Duran came in on the walk-off. So O'Neill was also mic'd up and kind of was a fun interview out in, I think it was left field tonight. And kind of chatting with the ESPN crew. It was a very uneventful inning, luckily. But moving on, I covered Devers. Connor Wong was 3-for-12, drove in the first two runs tonight in the finale. And I tweeted out, Devers and Bogarts really never truly broke out until their third year. They had a good couple of years leading into that, but their coming out party was year three. This is year three for Connor Wong, and he seems to be on the same pace those guys were. So a big series for him, and I wonder what the ceiling is. You know, Teal is going to be up soon, so you're probably just going to get a decent trade package for Wong, but we'll see. Bobby Dalbec, as I said, had a million strikeouts, but his four hits in the series were very productive. One was a bunt, the other was a swinging bunt. And then Yoshida was 5-for-7, so maybe Alex Cora lit a fire under him. But yeah, and then the pitching, pretty solid. Justin Slayton, 2 innings, 2 strikeouts. Bernardino was his solid self. Kenley Jansen was very effective in the finale in the 9th inning. And Zach Kelly as well. The bullpen, for the most part, was pretty good throughout the series. But Gabby, any thoughts on any of the honorable mentions?
Yeah, I actually wanted to go back to Wong. Wong was playing a base before, wasn't he? Didn't he sub in at one of the bases?
I think that was in the Indian series. He played first base.
The Guardians, Terry, in the Guardians series?
The Guardians.
Yeah, so maybe he has a future at first, or, you know, we don't need to give him away.
He can play second base, too. He was a middle infielder at one point.
See? We have options. We have options. And then the other one I wanted to bring up, Bobby Dalbec. He actually stole second base tonight, too, which shocked me. But, you know, maybe he's got a fire under his butt at this point. So
I think it's too late for Bobby now that Cooper's been acquired, but
maybe. But I feel like they've got some kind of special connection to Bobby, and they're not just going to get rid of him because they haven't yet, and they should have a long time ago. So I don't know.
In the year 2032, he's going to be coming off the Red Sox bench. I'm convinced of it.
There you go.
We're never getting rid of him. I'm not going to talk about things you can't get rid of that are unpleasant, but Bobby is never going away. I'm convinced of that.
Yeah.
On the topic of Bobby Dalbec, the broadcast mentioned something that I found pretty interesting tonight, where the bunt that he had in the series was his own volition. You know, that wasn't something from the third base coach. That wasn't something from Cora. You know, it was good Pac-12 baseball where he's like, hey, when you're not going well, you just put the ball in play, right? It's like, you know, a basketball player is just seeing a free throw go through the net. And, you know, maybe that'll like turn the luck around or turn the mojo around, which just proves, I mean, you know, as bad as it's been going for him, you know, as downtrodden as he could be, he's still out there fighting, right? You know, trying to make plays on defense, trying to make things happen on the base paths, trying to make things, you know, happen in the batter's box, which is just great to see for the kid. They mentioned that, you know, Yoshida was battling a jammed thumb. That's why he was in and out of the lineup. And then, you know, he kind of jammed his hand tonight. So he'll be going for x-rays. So we'll see what that's all about. Who really knows at this point. And another thing that I want to talk about on the broadcast was shouts out to the interpreter for Imanaga, because they were giving him soliloquies to translate for questions and then get the response back. They were not giving him easy questions to translate. They were like 5-6 parters. So I just wanted to give that man some credit, because I was sitting there being like, I can't even remember all the things that they were asking him. So I thought that was very impressive.
And Hout kept like blowing through the inning. So like, they were like, oh, now we can't even ask him another question.
Right. Yeah. They were super quick, which, you know, credit to Hout as well for, you know, another dazzling performance. He was really spinning it. Gabby.
Yeah. He was pretty quick during the inning of the Tyler O'Neill interview also. But I don't know if you noticed this, at the end of it, they asked him about the home run derby, and he said that he's just waiting for the invitation and he'd be down to go. So I think that would be really fun to watch.
I'm calling it right now. If he does the home run derby, he's going to leave that thing on a stretcher. Like, he's going to hurt himself in the home run derby.
Terry's convinced. Anything else that you guys wanted to add for the studs from this weekend?
Justin Slayton doesn't get enough love. I know I did mention him, but man, he was a starter in the minors until last year in the Texas system, and they converted him into a reliever, and then things started improving, but not enough for them to want to put him on their 40-man. So what happened was, because they were unwilling to do that, he went into the Rule 5, the Mets snagged him, the Red Sox traded for him, and now we have him. But what I'm wondering is, can we get him back to being a starter? Or is it just one of those things where he's going to have to be a reliever at this point? And the reason I question it is because, you know, if he was in the Tampa system, if they acquired him, he probably would be stretched out to be a starter. And then he'd win a Cy Young in like 2027. And that's just what happens in Tampa, that, you know, they just pluck these pitchers out of thin air. I mean, look at what Zach Lytle is doing. He was on our scrap heap last year. We acquired him for like a week and a half. Then we DFA'd him. Then Tampa got him. And he's pitching to the level of a number three. He pitched today against the White Sox and gave up, I think, just two earned over six innings. And the White Sox, probably the worst team in the league, I'm assuming, they swept Tampa. So that's kind of surprising. But, yeah, anyway, so I just wanted to throw that into the universe about Slayton, but I think we can probably move over now.
Always good to give some guys their deserved shine. But unfortunately, we're going to give some, I guess, unwanted attention to some people that had weekends to forget. For the dud segment, Terry, why don't you lead us off with your dud for the weekend?
I am not on the page I should be on, but I'll get there in a second. My dud is going to be Cutter Crawford. And maybe it's not fair because he's been solid, you know, throughout the year. Going into that start, he had a 0.66 ERA, and then Imanaga had a 0.83. So I was thinking, wow, this could be an epic pitcher's duel. But Crawford just struggled with his command a little bit, was kind of leaving balls up in the zone, and the Cubs were pouncing on him, and he ended up giving up three earned runs. I think there was an unearned run in there before he came out. And just wasn't a good night. He got slapped for 10 hits, only struck out four. And I've kind of been waiting for not necessarily the wheels to fall off for him, but, you know, last year he had his ruts that he went into, and it was mostly, I think, at Fenway when it happened. His home and road splits were drastically different. But there's been a couple of games where he just kind of lost his command, you know, in the fourth or fifth inning. And I forget which team it was. It might have been Anaheim. He lost everything except his sweeper. So he was throwing sweeper after sweeper after sweeper. It was the only pitch he could throw. It ended up being the last inning he was in there. So I'm just, you know, I'm a little skeptical on, you know, what the rest of the year can be. I mean, obviously, the earned run average is going to go up. It's unsustainable to be under one if you're a starting pitcher. And he's got that funky delivery we talked about. And I'm just wondering, as teams start to study it more and get better prepared, what is he going to be at this point? So wasn't a good series for him. I believe he is. No, actually, does he miss the Giants series? I'm not sure. Well, he does. Okay, so we'll pull those up later on, but not a good outing for him. And you know, if you had your bingo card up in front of you as far as games that we were going to lose, I'm not sure it was going to be the Crawford one.
Gabby?
I agree. It was not his finest start. However, I think it's just a blip, and I'm confident that he will come back during his next start, which actually I was wrong, Terry. It is during the Giants series.
So game three then.
I had it down as game two.
Game two, okay. All
right. Which is why I said he wasn't in it, because you think he wouldn't be because of numbers, but no, he's game two. First, so
yeah, he is game two. Okay, so MLB has that's the site I'm used to. I think Jason prefers ESPN, but there was nothing but TBDs as of this morning throughout the whole thing. But yeah, game two. So he's gonna face the Giants TBD starter. That was gonna be Blake Snell, interestingly, but he is on the injured list. I forget what the injury is. I don't think it's elbow related, but he ends up there every season, much like Eovaldi and Waka.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there weren't too many guys to pick from for duds for this series. You know, obviously the team kind of laid an egg in game one, but really, you know, kind of showed what they were made of in games two and three. But, you know, I want to give Cutter Crawford some credit here. You know, I feel like every pitcher kind of has one or two of those starts a year where they go one or two innings, they give up their eight runs, they get one or two strikeouts, and, you know, they just get absolutely smacked around for a lot of damage. And, you know, Cutter battled, he fought, he gave up a lot of hits, there was a lot of traffic on the base pass, but, you know, he kind of kept the team in the game for as long as he could when he clearly didn't have his best stuff. You know, time will tell if they're starting to figure him out a little bit. Time will also tell if he can, you know, kind of figure out what those, you know, I guess reactive adjustments are going to be. But, you know, to echo your guys' opinions too, I'm not too worried about it. I would need to see a pattern of this happening more and more against, you know, other teams that aren't doing so well, right? You know, if he goes into the White Sox and gets slapped around, or, you know, a team like Tampa that's currently down and gets beat up pretty bad, then, you know, those things might be something that we need to pay attention to a little bit more. But the Cubs were, you know, a pretty good team. They were first in the division. They were playing good ball, you know, many games above 500. And, you know, it was a tough billing, you know, that you had to go up and put up zeros against Imanaga. So not too worried about it. So we'll just turn the page, try to get this one out of the system and see how he does against San Francisco. Gabby, who was your dud for the series?
My dud was Christopher Martin. Enough said. No, I'm not sure if he's got some beef with Andrew Bailey and just has lost all of his mojo this year, or if Father Time is creeping up on him and he just cannot throw the same gas that he used to throw. But he is not 2023 Chris Martin, and he needs help. And I can see an IL stint in his near future. I feel like he just needs that at this point, because when he goes out on the mound, he is just a disaster waiting to happen.
Derek.
Yeah, I mean, I said right before the season started, it was going to be impossible to replicate the video game season he had last year. I didn't quite think it was going to be this bad. I mean, his earned run average is up to 5.5. And when you go back, I mean, he hasn't been stellar his whole career. He's been a very serviceable, you know, almost middle to late inning guy. And let's see, 2022, first half of the season, struggled with the Cubs, gets traded to the Dodgers. The Dodgers fix him like they fix everyone. Look at what they did with Brazier. And he had a hell of a second half with the Dodgers. And then whatever it was, he kind of carried it over to the Red Sox and went on that tear. And I don't know if the league has kind of figured it out. I mean, he doesn't blow people away with, you know, with velo and everything. So it's kind of crazy. And he was brought in the seventh inning to get the final out. There were runners on. I forget if they were on the corners or yeah, I think they were on the corners. And he got just a soft kind of comebacker that just was kind of dribbled to him and got it to first. It was two pitches in the seventh. So I was like, all right, well, that's, you know, he did his job there. And then it all went to hell in the eighth, a couple of singles right away. And then Mike Tauchman just blasted him, just barely went out, but it was to straightaway center. So, you know, that's the furthest you have to go to hit a home run. So I didn't think it was going to unravel that bad. And as soon as that happened, I'm like, oh my goodness, we're going to extras. I mean, there was no reason to assume the Red Sox were going to walk it off in the ninth. And I'm already, you know, looking at my score sheet here, looking, okay, Slayton's unavailable, Boozer's unavailable. You probably get an inning out of Bernardino. And I don't think we knew that Kenley was definitely going to be pitching the ninth in a tie game. So right away, I'm like, man, what a mess. But luckily, you know, Kenley shut the door, and then the offense did their thing later on. But Chris Martin turned it from an easy win to a relatively stressful win.
I mean, I don't really know what happened to this guy, right? This is Captain Jekyll and Hyde, right? You know, at the beginning of the season, they were touting him for, you know, most consecutive scoreless appearances. The dude was lights out. He was automatic, sub 2 ERA. Everything was easy, breezy, beautiful. It was, you know, whatever you wanted. You're like, oh, Chris Martin's in the game. Cool. Like, I can go get some water. I can go, you know, get some snacks or whatever it is. We'll check back in for the bottom half of the inning and, you know, kind of see what nightmares lie over there. And, you know, it's been a little bit of that in this season as well. You know, a microcosm of that. It's either going to be he gives up multiple runs in an inning or he's breezing right through it. Right. And even in this outing, you know, it's a bloop blast, right? Three earned runs there. And he strikes out two of the next three batters, 95 mile an hour with movement. And so, you know, I don't know if it's an adjustment, Gabby. I think that's an astute observation. He could have, you know, an oblique strain with a little IL stint or, you know, whatever it ends up being, just to kind of get his mind right, you know, reset his, you know, routine or whatever it is. But it's pretty clear that the guy isn't right, or he's at the very least not the same person that he was last year. And, you know, not that we were necessarily expecting him to be that pitcher, because that pitcher is insane, right? You know, to, I think he went like 26 scoreless appearances or something crazy. But, you know, yeah, that hit was dead center, right? It's not like, you know, the first single was kind of like a flare down the left field line. And then another one was a jam shot to right field, but boy, did Talkman square up that home run to center. So, you know, it's a real bummer to see. Hopefully he figures it out. Got to give props to Kenley for having probably his, you know, least stressful ninth inning to date. I wonder if we got Kenley in the ninth because we have the top of the order coming up next. But was there anything else that either one of you wanted to add on to Chris Martin? Nope. All righty. Hoping him all the best. My dud for this series, one I think, you know, last time, long time, hopefully, is Jolly Rodriguez. You know, one inning, three hits, three earned runs, you know, a 6.55 ERA. The gentleman has been, you know, designated for assignment. He's been released from the team. Another pat on the back to Breslow for getting him out of here. You never want to wish somebody unwell in their journeys, but I just don't think he was a major league pitcher. I know it was a bummer that he had to eat some innings for us, some unproductive innings at that, unfortunately. You know, I think this was, as Terry mentioned in earlier episodes, kind of like an options situation. He was out of options. Bernardino had a couple of more, and that's why Bernardino started down in AAA, and we got the Rodriguez experiment to start the season. But without, you know, being rude or offensive, I'm happy that this gentleman's no longer on our team. You know, hopefully he finds greener pastures, can figure out a way to catch on with another organization. Wish him all the best, but happy he's not doing it for the Red Sox anymore. So he is my dud for the series, perhaps the season at this point in time. But Terry, over to you.
Not a ton to add. I thought He put together a good string of appearances last year after a bad start, kind of similarly bad to what we've seen. But when the bullpen's as solid as it is, and, you know, other guys are emerging, guys like Slayton, Zach Kelly in a short sample size, Josh Winkowski, he might be starting for a little while, but when you have such depth in the bullpen, I mean, if you're not pitching well, it's on to the next guy. And that's what happened. I'm trying to get the Japanese player's name. Uesawa. I think Japanese names are just so cool. I just love the way that they flow. Like Sawamura, I love that. And, but anyway, so we'll see. I don't know the first thing about Uesawa. He did come from the Tampa organization, so he'll probably get some looks. He's not going to go into a high leverage spot, you know, right away. So, and the thing with Martin struggling, at least Jansen has it figured out seemingly. So, not a lot there. I wonder, well, I'll check on this here, but nothing else to really add on Jolie. I think he'll land somewhere though. I think someone will take him. Go ahead, Gary.
Do you think Jolie could be the next reclamation project for the Dodgers? Do you think that he's
of course
able to be saved, or is he just a complete wash at this point?
The Dodgers are going to be like, just throw a cutter. That's all they did with Brazier. They're like, yeah, I know you've been taken in the teeth, but throw a cutter. You'll be a stud.
I will say, I mean, Jolie always got to a 0-2 or a 1-2 count really fast. You know, whatever that sidearm kind of sweeper curve, whatever he was throwing would fool batters to get two strikes. He just didn't have that put away pitch. And oftentimes they squared it up. So, you know, if another team can find that punch out pitch for him, he could be pretty effective because he was doing the setup pretty well. He just couldn't get that final strike.
I was just trying to get an update on Whitlock, but there doesn't seem to be much, but I don't want any part of him in that rotation. I mean, you're making it work with Winkowski and Criswell right now. So if Martin does go on the injured list, I just think Whitlock is a seamless guy to plug in there. And, you know, not having Jolie anymore and not knowing what Uesawa is going to give you, I just think that Whitlock could be the great stabilizer there, but we'll see.
It almost makes too much sense for Whitlock to go right back to the bullpen in that eighth inning role. But Terry, who do we have for our dishonorable mentions tonight?
Well, there's not really, no one sucked bad.
A resounding endorsement.
In fact, none of the pitchers that we didn't already cover, everything was great in games, two and three, except for Martin, which we covered. It might be worth noting that Vaughn Grissom's going to be up. So the David Hamilton science project could be coming to an end. I'm assuming he's going to be the guy that gets optioned, but there's at least a slim chance it could be Reyes and perhaps even Dahlbeck as well. But who knows? I think it's going to be Hamilton, where he's the middle infielder, and then the other middle infielder, Grissom, is being activated. And it's going to be interesting. Grissom was 4-for-4 today in his final appearance with Worcester, and you add that right-handed bat to the lineup, and O'Neill is white hot, Wong is white hot. Dahlbeck, I mean, he's probably going to lose playing time because of Cooper, but suddenly from the right side, you're extremely serviceable and kind of getting that balance that we haven't really had. So I'm excited to see Grissom. And I think counting this year, Grissom has 5 years of control. So that's a guy you're going to have for a while. Now, the defense is terrible from what I've heard. So we'll see what happens there. But I think at least having Rafael at short, that should stabilize it somewhat.
Gabby?
You think we could put Grissom and Bobby together in like a duo and have Grissom hit and Bobby play defense?
Sometimes right? I wonder, like, what if baseball went to that, like almost a football type structure where you have your offense and then you have your defense, you know, like, I think that would ruin the game, obviously. But I'm like, there's so many players that are just so bad defensively. You're like, you almost can't be a major leaguer, you know, and. You know, so hopefully Grissom, hopefully he's just going to be at least close to average and not a frequent topic. I think I did mention this over the winter, but he followed the Bastards account. And I always get kind of self-conscious when that happens, because eventually I'm going to have a really mean tweet about him, you know? It just is what it is. So I just gave him a heads up. Let me see if I can just find it real quick. It's kind of awkward to have.
While you're doing that, maybe the Savannah Bananas will try this offense defense lineup, and we can see how that goes in you know, their event league.
Listen, yeah. It's not a bad idea. I mean, with all the injuries that are happening across the board, it might save a lot of players if they only have to play half the game.
So this is this is what I said to Grissom right after he followed me. I just happened to see the notification real fast. I was out on my walk, and when I'm out on my walk, I'm like, you know, 6 feet deep into Twitter the whole time. But I said, fair warning, we say mean things on the podcast sometimes if players F up a game or disappear offensively. I said, just drive in the winning run or go 8 for your next 20 and you'll be one of our favorite players again. We forgive very quickly, I said, and we do hope you crush it. And he says, ha ha ha, drops the F bomb, and then says, thanks for the heads up with a handshake emoji. And yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. Another thing, I don't know if I mentioned this. As everyone knows, I do Uber. I do it less now because I finally got a real job driving a truck during the week. But I do still do it on Saturday nights. And I picked up a random passenger out in the middle of nowhere in an area I almost never drive. But that's just where the calls pulled me. And he had a Braves hat on. And this was in like February or March, maybe even January. And he gets in, and I said, you a big Braves guy? And most of the time they're like, oh, I just wear the gear. But he's like, oh yeah, I love the Braves. I'm so pumped. He goes, I'm pissed though. They just traded my favorite player to the Red Sox. And I was like, Vaughn Grissom? And he goes, yeah. He said favorite prospect, actually. And I was like, oh, cool. I said, well, I hope it doesn't, you know, rub you the wrong way, but I happen to be a Red Sox fan, and you might have seen my Red Sox plate on the front of my car. And so we had an interesting conversation the whole way to his destination, just about the Braves you know, what his thoughts were this season. Whenever I go to Fenway, I always seek out the away teams fans, you know, because there's a bunch of them, you know, and I'm sure there were tons of Cubs fans, and I always want to talk about their team. I'm like, I'm sick of talking about the Red Sox. I do it all week long on the podcast, so you know, I just want to kind of dive into their team. I'm like, you got any prospects coming up, and you know, how do you feel about your bullpen and this and that? So I enjoy it, you know, when I do come across you know, other baseball fans in the wild.
It's always good to get the lay of the land for other organizations, right? Like, there's no way to pay attention to all 30 teams, top to bottom, you know, major leagues down to single A, and still have a regular time job. But, you know, it is fun to talk about, you know, other teams with other fans that are passionate.
Absolutely.
Anything else to add to this episode? Nope. Well, that'll do it for us. Everybody, thank you all for listening. Have a great day and take care.